an ever-changing world, Off Hollywood Media presents a voice of truth and inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
And to be able to just feel like I was loved and to feel the love and all of that, I can honestly say that I feel that I have that in every single member of my family now today and with all my close friends. It's interesting because we had Mike Robbins on the show the week before Christmas, I believe it was. And he's the author of Be Yourself, Everyone Else Is Already Taken. And he was talking about that relationship of the holidays and our families and how people so regret going to be with their families. And, of course, I could relate because it was that time when I felt that way. But I don't feel that way anymore. On the contrary, I can't wait to get together with every single member of my family. And to spend time with all of my friends. There isn't a friend that I say, oh, he's calling or she's calling. There just isn't anymore. And that's a big deal. As a matter of fact, when people die, that's the thing they talk about the most, that they wish they had spent more time with people they loved and had better relationships with people they loved. I have that. And yet I look at that now and say, oh, yeah. Yeah, I got that. Now I want a bigger career in radio or television, and I want more money to be able to do the things that I want, and even if it's good stuff for other people. Have I forgotten that there was a time when the maybe the single most important thing in everyone's life at the end of their life of having these relationships, I have, and I already have that? And that's so much further than so many people. So that's a big thing. And I just sometimes think, oh, yeah, whatever, I got that. And now I'm on to something else. So I'm looking at finances instead. When there was a time spiritually that I thought, oh, I'm so confused. Who is God? And I learned this as a child, and my parents taught me that in church, but I don't know, and there was so much confusion. And all of a sudden, I wake up in the morning, and I feel like I'm connected with God as God, as I understand it. At least I have an understanding or a feeling about God and spirituality and my higher self and connectedness that I am comfortable with and happy with. And that's something that people start to look at as their life starts to end. They start looking for a relationship with their God. I've got that. I should be happy about that. And I am, now that I think about it. But I'm looking at, oh, I want finances to be this way. I want, you know, this to be that way. And I lose track of the things that I wanted and that I now have, and that I could and will from now on be grateful for. And in so doing, I'm sure I will be able to manifest all the other things that I still think I feel like I can't live without. And so it's interesting to be talking about this on the radio today with you all, because it's recorded. It's not only going out there for all of the universe to be hearing me and I'm saying it out loud, but it's also going to be on our archives. And someday, I hope very soon, when I have all of those things that I feel like I can't live without right now, and when I've started to think about other things that I'm not thinking about from this place in my life, and I start to say, yeah, I have that, but what I really want is this, that I can go back and listen to myself and see that there was a time when I wanted those things that at that point I may be just looking at and saying, oh, yeah, but I want something else. So thank you for letting me share that with you today, and I hope you're with me on those thoughts, and I'd love to hear from you. We love to hear from you on Facebook and on email, and phone. We just at our live events, we just love to hear and connect with all of you. So please share with us your thoughts on that. And it's interesting because one of the things that I think I have as part of this wheel of life thing and balance, et cetera, is health. However, our guest today might beg to differ, and I can't wait to bring her on. And before we do, I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Filippo Voltaggio on Life Changes, and you can find out more about us at www.lifechanges.ws. Now let's find out more about our guest. She's Robin O'Brien, and according to the New York Times, Robin is Food's Erin Brockovich. As the founder of Allergy Kids, an organization designed to protect the 1 in 3 American children with autism, allergies, ADHD, and asthma. 1 in 3. That was amazing to me when I read her statistic. Robin has appeared on Good Morning America, CBS Evening News with Katie Couric, and CNN, highlighting the role that chemicals in our food supply are having on our health and the health of our children. Born and raised in a conservative Texas family on supply-side economics and the Wall Street Journal, Robin earned a Fulbright fellowship, an MBA, and served as an equity analyst on a multi-billion dollar fund prior to moving to Boulder, Colorado with her husband and 4 children, and starting this whole major movement that we are so glad that she is doing, because she is the author of this book, called The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. Let's find out right now. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it is our pleasure, and thank you for writing this book, for coming to a connected place about all of these things that you could do in the world, and instead dedicating your life to the health of our children and our food supply and us ultimately. So thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome. You know, it was simply one of those things where I learned something that I simply could not unlearn. And once I recognized that and I really embraced that responsibility, then I really set out to make change. And I think, you know, as I have advocated for the safety of the food supply, to place the value on the same lives of American eaters that have been placed on the lives of people that eat around the world, I realize that each and every single one of us has a unique ability to affect remarkable change, and that together, collectively, we can inspire things that we never, ever might have imagined.
You know, it's interesting, Robin. We think of, or we don't think of food. We just put it in our mouths. We get it at the store. We put it in our mouth. A lot of us don't give that much thought to it, and it's scary that a lot of us don't even read the ingredients. And yet, it's not even the ingredients that you're talking about. It's things that are seen and unseen, right?
Well, you know, I mean, in all candor, I was one of those people. I trusted that if it was on the grocery store shelves, that it was fine. You know, I had 4 little kids. Picky eaters, limited time, limited budget, and so I'd go racing through the grocery store or through Costco or Sam's the same way. And I just trusted that if it was there, it had been tested and that it was safe. And when my youngest child had an allergic reaction one morning over breakfast, I suddenly stepped back and I said, you know, since when did food get so toxic to kids? Because with this background in finance, I started to pull these statistics. I hadn't been particularly sensitive to the food allergy thing. You know, I had a couple kids, and they ate their PB&Js, and I really didn't want anyone telling me what to feed my kids. And that morning, as I sat down, as she had had the allergic reaction, I learned that 1 out of 17 children under the age of 3 had a food allergy, that there had been a doubling of the peanut allergy from 1997 until 2002, and that according to the Centers for Disease Control, there had been a 265% increase in the rate of hospitalizations related to food allergies. And these are just jaw-dropping statistics. And so, as I started to learn about it, I said, you know, okay, a food allergy is when your body sees food as foreign and it launches an inflammatory response to basically flush out the foreign invader. And it can be mucus, it can be, you know, watery eyes, it can be inflamed skin, and in some cases it can be a life-threatening reaction, but that's your body's attempt to try to drive out that foreign invader as it's perceived. And so I stopped and I thought, you know, I didn't know anybody that had food allergies when I was a kid. is there something foreign in our food that wasn't there when we were kids? And that's when my story truly began, where I unearthed that beginning in 1994, we began to engineer foreign proteins into the food. And milk, dairy allergy is the most common allergy in the United States, according to CNN. And in 1994, we engineered a foreign protein into our dairy, and it drove profitability, it enhanced profitability for the dairy industry. At the same time, studies had not been adequately done to determine if it was safe. And because of that, governments around the world, from Canada, the UK, Australia, Japan, all across Europe, they said this has never been proven safe, so we won't allow it into our food supply. Whereas here in the US, we have a different standard. We simply say it hasn't been proven dangerous, and we'll allow it in. And so with that, you know, as I unearthed that, I thought, okay, if milk's the most common allergy, soy is another allergy. What's going on with soy? And I learned that a few years later, again, in order to drive profitability for the soybean industry, that soy had been engineered. And governments around the world again said, we don't know if this is safe, and we're not going to allow it into our food supply. Or if they chose to allow it into the food supply, they insisted that it be labeled so that consumers could make an informed choice. And this is all just within the last 15 years. And so with that, you know, as I began to learn about this, as I began to learn about these foreign toxins and these foreign proteins in our food, It was terrible information to unearth, and I really didn't want to know it. Yet at the same time, I couldn't unlearn it. And as I looked at my four children playing in the backyard one afternoon, paralysis just simply wasn't an option. Mm. And so at that point, I had to decide, you know, do I move forward on this? It's a story that in some cases is so unbelievable that there's going to be tremendous resistance. But at the same time, I knew that I had to do everything I can to try to inform and inspire, so that we could place the same value on the lives of our kids that have been placed on the lives of kids around the world. And so with that, you know, it really began this incredible journey, and it was incredibly intense at times, you know, where I realized that, you know, I am just one person, but there were other people that knew this. And so I found those people. I found the choir, you know, the people that already knew it, so that I wasn't standing alone. And that as we joined our voices together, we were so much more powerful than any of us were individually. And with that, you know, it really started to grow, and I continued to reach out. I continued to really try to reach people that I thought were absolutely unreachable, just simply reaching across the divide that they had family members that were struggling with allergies or autism. As I began to learn about the consequences of these foreign proteins and the studies linking them to things like breast and prostate and colon cancer, I went to the American Cancer Society, and I learned that the U.S. has the highest rate of cancer of any country in the world, and that migration studies show that if you were to move here from somewhere like Japan, your likelihood of developing cancer increases fourfold. And it was at that point I realized, you know, it doesn't matter where you are on the socioeconomic ladder or where you sit on the political spectrum, this is impacting all of our families. All of us know somebody that has a food allergy, or someone who has a child with autism, or somebody who has a mother with breast cancer. And so in that, I realized that this was a very personal issue. It touched so many of us. And that once we did know about these chemicals in the food supply, there was so much that we could do to protect the health of our families. Because today, 1 in 8 women has breast cancer, but what most people don't realize is that only 1 in 10 of those cases are genetically triggered, which means 9 out of 10 of them are environmentally triggered. Wow. So if we can start to really manage some of these environmental insults, there's so much that we can do to protect the health of our family.
Well, Robin, when you say you've reached out and you've gotten some attention, I'll say you reached out to Prince Charles and you've got him to be a member now of the Allergy Kids team, and you've reached out to Paul Newman's daughter, Nell Newman, and she is now a member, and Aaron Brockovich and Dave Scott and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I mean, these are people with a lot of clout. Is it helping?
Well, you know, I mean, again, what's interesting is, you know, officially or unofficially, they're not necessarily members of the team per se, but to really reach out to these people and to share a message that is so vitally important, and then to have them come back with a letter, you know, to have a letter from Buckingham Palace, or to have, you know, the response that I've had was incredibly empowering, because it really does speak to how each and every one of us can affect change. Because there's nothing special about me or what I had. I had a laptop. I had this incredible heart for my family, which everyone does. and just this unique position, this unique ability to really advocate an important message. And so, again, I reached out to people that I knew were receptive to it first, because there were plenty of people that didn't want to hear this, and I understand that, because I was one of those people for decades. And so I really had to find the people that were open to the message, that were already working on behalf of issues like this. Nell Newman has been an incredible advocate for keeping chemicals out of the food, as had Prince Charles. And so, you know, I was very familiar. I did my homework. I really reached out to the people that I knew would be open to hearing the message in the first place. And with that, I began to assemble a team, and really, you know, it's more, I felt that it was a family of people that had this mission at heart. And so, you know, again, with that, it was together, all of us. We all sit at this table together. And when you step back and you realize that countries around the world have done a tremendous job protecting their citizens from the potential harm of some of these chemicals and some of these proteins in the food, you realize there really is a lot that we can do together to really, you know, clean up our food supply.
You know, Robin, I can't wait to talk to you about that. And yet, you know, I'd like to go someplace where I hardly ever go. And you can decide whether you want to go there or not. But, you know, you say we're all sitting at the table. But somebody sitting at the table invented these chemicals. And somebody sitting at the table pushed it on or promoted it to somebody else, and then somebody else approved it who's sitting at the table, and these people have children. How do we address that?
You know, I think, you know, as I unearthed it, again, my background is finance, and so I felt that it was absolutely vital to understand who was funding the research. And as I began to see who was funding the research, I realized, you know, the corporations that have invented these products are the ones funding the research. And at the same time, the FDA doesn't have the money, it doesn't have the budget to conduct independent studies, and so therefore they have to rely on these corporations in order to get the validity of the product. And so, you know, again, it's a system that hasn't been adequately funded. As I disclosed in my research, you know, in November of 2007, the FDA actually issued a report that said lives are at risk because we can no longer vouchsafe the food supply.
Wow. Okay, so again, not to harp on this, but are the people that are inventing this stuff and putting it into the food and saying that it is safe when we know they know that it's not, kind of like with the cigarettes and, you know, all that kind of thing? Do they eat someplace else? Do they get their food from someplace else? Do they grow their own? I mean, you may or may not know this, but it doesn't make sense to me. It's almost like spiting our hand. Biting our nose to spite our face.
You know, I mean, again, it's a really good question. You know, I would have to think that there would not be a malicious agenda in place where people would knowingly go into something like this. And I also think, you know, having worked in a corporation, the things can be very compartmentalized, so people simply don't know. And if one scientist is researching one particular thing and another scientist is researching something totally different along, you know, the same lines on that product, they may never know what the other is researching. And again, as the information is pulled together by yet another person, you know, there's different expertise or different skill sets involved, and it can become very compartmentalized. I mean, that would be my guess. You know, again, however, at the same time, as the research continues to mount over the impact that these environmental insults and these toxins are having on the health of children and, you know, big kids too, quite candidly, governments around the world are holding their ground and saying, you know, we don't want this in our food supply. And so when you really step back and you take a global perspective and put that lens on it, it really does beg the question, you know, given the tremendous burden that disease is placing on our country and the healthcare crisis that we're all witnessing, why we're still doing this.
Thank you. I like that you're not necessarily pointing fingers and putting blame. You're saying, okay, we have this, and this is where we are. Let's do something about it. And
absolutely. It's a broken system. It's a broken system. And, you know, I think you know, a lot of parallels have been made to the tobacco industry. you know, only time will tell if that's truly the case. You know, what we've got is a broken system, which means there's a lot we can do to fix it.
Okay. Okay, so what is it that we have? You know, we get up in the morning and we have our cereal, like you were saying, and we go and we have our lunch maybe at a fast food place and dinner at a restaurant, whatever, and we're buying things off the shelf. What is in there? What are some of the things that you could tell us that is happening to our food? What exactly?
Well, you know, I mean, one of the first to me that was just the most stunning was the engineering of milk. Milk is just such a trusted commodity in our culture, and to realize that there was a growth hormone, a synthetic protein, that was now in our dairy, the governments around the world didn't consider safe because it made not only the cow sick, which required increased antibiotic use in the cows and concern about antibiotic resistance, you know, then in the people consuming the dairy from those cows, but studies continued to mount showing that it elevated hormone levels that were linked to breast, prostate, and colon cancer. And so when I learned that, you know, there were some pretty dark moments in this house where I stopped and I thought, how many sippy cups have I filled with this milk and how many bowls of cereal have I poured this milk into?
Mm.
And with that, I felt, you know, one of the first steps that I could make would be to just get this synthetic hormone out of my children, out of my family's diet. And fortunately, that was incredibly easy. It's known as RBGH, and Walmart carries RBGH-free milk as the Safeway, Kroger, every grocery store in the country pretty much would have RBGH-free milk in their private label brand.
And now, so this is new, though, Robin. This is new thanks to people like you who recently have said, we don't want this.
Well, again, and what's so incredibly inspiring is that these corporations are responding. And even though the FDA says, you know, statistically, it's all the same, you don't need to worry, the corporations now are voluntarily removing this growth hormone from their products, and they're going RBGH-free. And so Danon and Yoplait, Kraft has a product line. And again, it really does speak to the incredible collective ability that we all have to affect this change.
Mm. Wow. Okay, so what else is out there?
So, you know, Milk Bunny is one of the chapters in The Unhealthy Truth. Another one is Soy Secrets. And again, you know, it's just recognizing that as soy was engineered, it was engineered to be high-sugar soy because it is used primarily to fatten the livestock. Governments around the world stopped and they said, you know, we don't know what this will do to diabetes. We don't know what this will do to obesity. So we're not going to allow this into the food supply because it hasn't yet been proven safe. And sure enough, you know, you have articles out of publications like The Economist that refer to diabetes as an American epidemic. And so, you know, with that, there were ways, you know, there were concerns over soy back in 1998 that were presented at the FDA. And it's simply to step back and say, you know, it's a double-edged sword. We don't know yet. And because of that, why don't we use exercise caution, do these things in moderation? And so that was another piece. Corn is another one that a few years later got engineered. In the late 1990s, there was growing concern of the spraying of insecticides over corn. And so scientists decided to engineer that insecticidal protein into the corn seed itself so that as the corn plant grows, it releases its own insecticide. And again, governments around the world said, you know, this has not yet been proven safe, and they wouldn't allow it into their food supply. And in some countries, they considered it so potentially dangerous that they didn't want it fed to their livestock. And then even further, in some countries like France and New Zealand, they don't even want it planted in their soil. And so, you know, again, as I stopped and I learned this, I thought, okay, the only way to avoid these chemicals in the food is to, you know, go with a pure organic diet, because by law, the USDA mandates that organic food cannot contain these insecticidal proteins within them, that it cannot contain these genetically engineered proteins, and it cannot contain these synthetic chemicals. But as I learned that, I thought, you know, that's just not an option for most of the country. Mm. And as I really started to analyze why it's not an option and why it's so expensive, I realized that we use our taxpayer dollars to give money to the farmers growing these crops with chemicals. And then at the same time, the farmers that are growing the crops without chemicals are charged fees to prove that theirs are safe without chemicals. And then on top of that, they're charged fees to then label it. And that's why the organic food is so much more expensive. And so I thought, you know, as a national family, if we were sitting down with our national budget as a family, I'd rather be allocating my taxpayer dollars over here to the stuff that's not grown with the chemicals so that it becomes more affordable.
Wow.
And that's one of the key pieces that I really advocate on, because this is not about lifestyles of the rich and famous. This is about all of us being able to afford clean and safe food for our families.
Mm. I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Life Changes, and this is Filippo Voltaggio having an amazing conversation with Robin O'Brien, author of The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It. You can learn more about Robin O'Brien at our website at www.lifechanges.ws, and you can also learn about her at her website. Actually, Robin, do you want to give out the Robin O'Brien one or the Allergy Kids one?
Well, you know, I would love to hear from people at robinobrien.com, R-O-B-Y-N-O-B-R-I-E-N.com, or allergykids.com, either one. The Allergy Kids site is really focused, it was originally launched for the children, as you mentioned, for the 1 in 3 that has asthma, autism, allergies, or ADHD, which is commonly coming known as the 4 A's. And there you can link to the personal website, which is broader. It speaks to anyone that eats anywhere. It's not just targeted at children and food allergies. So either way, I would love to hear from your listeners, because I invite them to contribute, to share their stories, to really reach out so that, you know, together, collectively, we are so powerful.
You know, absolutely. And Robbie, you know, it's interesting. I was shocked at your statistics, and you mentioned it again, 1 in 3. And yet, you know, there are 4 siblings in my family, and I would have to say that all 4 of us, even though we grew up in a generation before the one today, we all had issues that I have a great feeling that are directly tied to the food. And I myself took some radical changes because the allergies and the health issues were so bad that I became a vegan. And so I stopped eating meat altogether because I knew that it had something to do with the meat. I knew it had something to do with the dairy from the research I was doing. And so about 14 years ago, maybe a little more, I became a vegan. And it's interesting because I jumped into soy products and the quote unquote healthy soy products and a lot of grains and all that. And it's almost as if I jumped out of the frying pan into the fire, because I wasn't eating organic, and I was experiencing, though I felt a lot better, some of the same issues. So I hear what you're saying, and this is grave.
Well, absolutely, and again, it's really recognizing that, you know, in moderation, and I stress that tremendously as a mother of 4, that we can't make the perfect the enemy of the good. And I really do emphasize that, you know, you do what you can within your means, within your time constraint, within the stress levels of your life, and you choose something that you can work towards. And for me, that was an 80-20 rule, where I tried to work towards doing a good job 80% of the time to really try to reduce my family's exposure to some of these chemicals. And then the other 20% of the time, I just had to give myself a pass, because we live in a real world where these kids go to birthday parties and they get a blue cupcake. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to make the perfect the enemy of the good, or else there's no way I could have succeeded. And so it's really, you know, to emphasize that balance and to find a way that it works for you. Because, again, you know, as you recognize, it's not that the foods are necessarily bad, because they're foods that, you know, have been around for generations.
Right.
What has changed are the chemicals within those foods. Mm. And really, that's what you want to target, is how do you reduce your family's exposure in an overall way to the chemicals in the food supply.
Yeah, I'm really happy to hear what you're saying, and I have a feeling that our bodies certainly can handle 20% a lot easier than they can 100%. And so I think it'd be interesting to be growing up as a child in this day and age and go to a party and, like you said, get a certain type of cupcake and be able to say, oh, I can't eat that. As a child, that's really hard. Or candy bars or candy at Halloween, whatever it is. It's got to be difficult.
You know, it is difficult, but at the same time, parenthood has become tremendously difficult for this generation of parents because of these conditions. We've talked about autism, allergies, ADHD, and asthma. And we've talked about cancer. At the same time, the Centers for Disease Control now estimates that 1 out of 2 minority kids and 1 out of 3 Caucasian kids born in the year 2000, which is my daughter's fourth grader class, 1 out of 2 and 1 out of 3 of those kids are expected to be insulin dependent by the time they reach adulthood. And
wow.
So, you know, for us, it was recognizing that, okay, this might be a little bit more work up front, but wow, what tremendous benefit it's going to bring later, not only in health benefits for the children, but in the time that we're spending back and forth to the pediatrician's office and the money that we're spending on doctor's visits and drugstore visits and everything else. And so, you know, with that, it was how do you do this in a manageable way? And that was incredibly important to me to stress. And so, you know, in all candor, my kids were totally hooked on fluorescent orange mac and cheese, and so we had to wean them. And just like you wean a kid from a sippy cup or potty train them, you know, we took that same approach. And so we went to 3/4 of the pack of powder and then half and then 1/4 of the pack until, you know, they got used to the fact that noodles were noodles. Another step we took was, you know, would my grandmother have had a jar of this on her kitchen counter? Yellow number 5, it's not used in kids' products around the world because of its link to hyperactivity.
Mm.
Well, you bet with 2 little boys and 2 little girls, I was going to try to reduce my kids' exposure to yellow number 5 if it was linked to hyperactivity. And so we took these baby steps together, and it was like potty training. It wasn't always perfect. It was a process. But as we did it, we realized that, you know, together we really could affect remarkable change.
You know, we're talking about kids, and yet we're not talking about kids. We're talking about all of us, and yet the kids inside of us is part of what we're talking about. I remember recently seeing an adult, even older than I, eating something that was, it was glowing, yellow or orange or whatever it was. And I'm thinking, really? You really need to have that? I mean, you see something like that and you really want to put it in your mouth? It's actually not natural. You don't see apples glowing. You know, you don't see vegetables in bright pinks. It's not natural.
You know, but I think part of it is that we've all been marketed to for so long that we've gotten so far from what the natural state of food actually is. And I was fully in that camp. The morning that my daughter had the allergic reaction, it was blue yogurt over breakfast. And so as we really began to learn about the chemicals in the food supply and to learn that they were linked to hyperactivity and all kinds of other things, it was a real education process. And it wasn't easy. There were things I didn't want to let go of, you know, and I also recognized that food is an incredibly emotional issue
mm-hmm.
and that there's a lot woven into that. And that when you're asking somebody to let go of something in their food, you know, that you have to allow for that separation anxiety and the grief that, you know, that loss might create. And I've really worked through a lot of that. You know, we really, as a family, we worked through a lot of it and recognized, again, that we couldn't make the perfect the enemy of the good, that there were times that you just simply needed that crutch. But as this awareness grew and as you moved forward, you know, you had these incredible goals and these incredible objectives, and it all was wrapped around the health of your family.
You know, some of these things I look at as Santa Claus. Now, I hope there are not any children listening, because I'm going to say that there is no Santa Claus, per se, the one man that goes around giving gifts on Christmas Eve. But, you know, that as we start to grow up, we say, oh, wasn't that nice that we believed in that we had that little fantasy, or wasn't it fun, or, you know, we got something out of that. But now it's a different time. Now we're a different age, or now it's a different world, and we can't allow ourselves to have that kind of fun anymore, especially when we look at it and realize that the consequences of, quote-unquote, still believing in Santa Claus or still eating fluorescent food, let's just say, or food with chemicals in it, are too grave to us for us to play anymore in that playground.
You know, I mean, that's actually a pretty fair analogy. And I think, you know, having really had to go through that paradigm shift, it's tremendously hard. Just as a kid, nobody wanted to stop believing. You know, you're trying to hang on to something. Because it does, it nourishes you on a lot of levels. At the same time, you know, it was that it's that realization that we're the big kids at the table, and that this is compromising the health of all of us. And when I really stepped back and realized the governments around the world had done such an incredible job of taking a precautionary stance and approach to protecting the health of their citizens, you know, I realized there really was a lot that we could do, and that, you know, with the headlines about salmonella and everything else, you know, all of the E. coli, everything that we're getting, you know, almost too frequently now, it really does speak to the incredible ability that each and every one of us has to protect the health of our families if we can follow the lead of what eaters around the world are already doing.
You know, excellent. And so you said that we could start looking at buying more organic for those of us who can, or where it's available, et cetera. And actually, you know, in farmers markets, organic foods are a lot less expensive than in some of the stores, and are easier to find, at least pesticide-free and chemical-free and all of that. But, okay, so we could do that, those of us that can, and then we can also start looking at the milk carton and reading ingredients and seeing what's in our food, especially when it comes to milk, corn and soy. Now, for those of us that could do more, what else can we do?
Well, that's where at the RobinO'Brien.com site, you know, we've got lots of ways that you can engage. There are amazing organizations that I have partnered up with who have incredible advocacy representation where there can be letters sent to your local congressman, your local senator. And what is so important to remember about that is that they have grandchildren, too, and they have children, too, with autism or allergies or asthma, with cancer. They have parents with cancer. And chances are they don't know this yet either. And once they learn it, they are going to be so inspired to affect change, too. And so really it is together. We can educate each other. We can inform each other. And it is in that collective work that we're going to be able to affect this change. And so, you know, there are amazing websites that I have at RobinO'Brien.com where people can come, they can be part of the community, they can engage with others that are trying to make these changes, whether it's in baby steps or, you know, whether you're willing to go with a giant leap. There is so much that you can do. I have lists on that site where, you know, instead of choosing the fluorescent orange mac and cheese, go to white mac and cheese first. You know, take these in baby steps in a way that doesn't force you to change grocery stores. It doesn't require you to grow your own vegetable garden. In a perfect world, yes, that's where we would all be, but I don't live in that perfect world, and chances are most of your listeners don't either. And so with that, you know, there are amazing simple steps that we can take to start protecting our health. And the thing that's so inspiring is that it's so fulfilling as you begin to take those baby steps and do these little things that you're going to want to do more. And again, it's amazing, actually, how easy it is.
Well, we're going to feel better, and we're also going to feel like we're making a difference in our world and in the world of our children.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, which is just, it's an incredible mission to be a part of.
You know, Robin, I can't wait to meet you.
Thank you.
I know you're doing a book tour, and are the dates listed on your website as well?
Yeah, they are on the website, and I was actually just out in L.A. last week, and it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. We had perfect weather. But,
yeah, that's incredible last week.
I do. I had to Texas this week, and then I'll be in Chicago next week.
Well, I, the next time you're in LA, please do let us know, and maybe we can do something live together, because I'm all about this. This is very exciting to me, and to us at Life Changes. And talk about life changes. I mean, this is the one of the most fundamental changes that we can make in our lives and in our world today.
Absolutely. And again, you know, as you really start to value the choices that you make for your family for food, you realize that you're really valuing yourself, and it's holding yourself up, and that, you know, in that, you have this unique talent, you have a unique skill set that nobody else has. And really, you know, with the food supply being such a mess, we need all hands on deck. And so it's an incredible opportunity to lend that skill set that is uniquely you to a cause that is just so worthy.
Well, you know, I want to leave our listeners with a positive story. I know you've got some funny stories and some positive stories about some of the changes that are happening because you're out there promoting this book and people are telling you what they're doing and how you've affected them and how this is affecting them and their families. Is there a story that you'd like to leave us with?
You know, I think probably one of the most inspiring stories is out of a farmer's wife in Nebraska. And she's a mother of four, and she was recently diagnosed with breast cancer. And she reached out to me to share her story. Her husband and her father-in-law are actually farmers, you know, with these chemically toxic crops. And she got together with a group of women and moms and parents in Nebraska and assembled a group, and they actually found a place in Arizona that was going to bring in the vegetables and bring in the organic produce for them so that she could teach her kids. And it's an incredibly inspiring story. She absolutely thrives on hope and on the education and on the ability to affect change, on the ability to teach her children so that they can continue to teach change. And I think that it's in that heart, it's in that dedication, it's in that passion that all of us have this ability to do this together. And so I do invite your listeners to be part of the solution. It is a mess, which means there is so much that you can do to contribute to the solution. And it's an incredible opportunity. And like you said, it is incredibly fulfilling. And so I would love to invite your listeners to contact me and to really be part of the team.
And that there is hope, that we don't have to just be victims and our hands are not tied. And you have shown us how you have made a difference and how we can too. And so I not only thank you for being on the show, again, I thank you for this charge that you've taken on and for your book. The book is The Unhealthy Truth. We've been talking to Robin O'Brien, and her website is robinobrien.com, and that's RobinOBRIEN. Robin, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, it's our pleasure. Wow. Well, with that, from one life change to another, we turn to Dorothy Lee with the State of the Universe Address.
Hi. Thank you, Robin. That was awesome. It's hard for me to believe that half of January is already behind us. Time is truly speeding up. So let's focus on how to make the best use of it. Let us choose to become aware of and take advantage of the powerful energies that are pouring into Mother Earth and into us. Tonight, I want to share some great advice from our friends Simeon, the evolutionary collective of seventh dimensional light beings channeled through my friend Jill Mara. This coming year of 2010 is bright with possibilities for your evolution. We see a rising intensity of focus among the bearers of light on your planet. There is a strong wave of probability that involves many souls on a path of enlightenment that will pave the way for humanity and Mother Earth to ascend. The potential is there, and this is uplifting news for your world and many beyond. Many will join and assist in brightening the vibration of your system in this coming year. We see 2010 as a tipping point. If there is a time to put forth your efforts and shine your light, it is now. The openings to cosmic energy points and beings that can aid your journey are acute. The frequency is also heightening to allow each individual to tap into their true soul light and shed the veils that have kept them from springing forth with their unique gifts. 2010 is a time of magical discovery and increased sensitivity for those that attempt to open themselves to their potential. The trials and tribulations of the last several years can be transformed into awakening in 2010 that leads to ever-accelerating vibrancy in the following years. This increase can push your species and planet into the next dimensional shift as early as the predicted 2012, but much depends on how each individual soul takes on their part in sharing light from Source. This coming year is a time to shed the perception of trouble and strife and exchange that vision for one of transformation, growth, and sharing, and for envisioning the new reality that you are striving for. 2010 is a year for letting go of the old and preparing for a new you and a new experience of reality. We suggest that you do the following six things to make the best of the insurgence of high-frequency light this year. 1. Acknowledge what is holding you back from being true to your path of light. Ask for guidance in releasing these patterns once and for all. Allow yourself freedom from fears that keep you from being true to your soul's desire to share. 2. Go for it. Whatever your soul has been aching to do, be, and share of itself, begin or continue to do it, no matter how absurd, silly, impossible, or risky it appears to your rational ego self. Take steps towards shining your particular creative spirit, no matter how simple and insignificant your self-doubt makes it out to be. Follow the quiet part of your being that knows what to do. 3. Be prepared to flow with synchronicity. Being too rigid with plans will not work with this new energy. You must be willing and able to let go of expectations for particular outcomes. Paths of light may meander in an unforeseen way, so be ready to flow with your intuitive senses and look for the silver strings of light within seemingly challenging or unexpected circumstances that alter your original plans. 4. Use your imagination, please. You have an amazing ability inherent in your imaginative natures. Tap into the magic and power of your imagination. Imagine your soul is sharing its unique qualities, and imagine what that would look and feel like. Imagine you are already sharing the enlightened soul that you, in fact, already are. Your imagination is always a doorway to the core level of creational being. 5. See the light in others and give them the gift of yours in all your interactions. Simply imagining others filled with the spark of creation will change your relationships and allow you to see the potential in all of your meetings. 6. Keep the vision of an uplifting future alive. When you feel down or fail to see how the human race will ever realize the error of its ways, switch gears. Refocus on the light bearers and all the amazing work they are doing, along with all the guidance that is available from others. Bring your attention back to the light within and its power of transformation and its ultimate ability to rise above any turmoil. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, Simeon. So let's do it. Let's focus on the good and let our lights shine. Thank you for listening. And until next week, please remember that you are the power in your world. You are the guru you've been waiting for. Choose to become a very conscious co-creator by making more elegant choices. And never forget that you are powerful beyond measure, and that you are love, you are lovable, and you are loved.
Thank you, Dorothy, for that. And let's do it. I like that. That feels so good. You're not saying, you do it.
Let's do it.
Or just do it. Or you better do it. You said, let's do it. So it feels all-inclusive, and it feels like you're going to be part of it with us.
I truly am.
Okay, well,
let's shine our lights.
In 2010 and beyond.
And beyond.
In 2010 and beyond, we are going to be shining our light. Well, we have been shining light, I think, already. For a while. But here we are doing it on radio since April of this year, and we're growing. Last year, that's
not
right.
Not April, yes. Going back.
Well, not in Kansas anymore. Since April of last year, almost a year. Thank you for correcting me on that. And it's been exciting. We've had some amazing guests, and we have so many people that are asking to be on the show. It's just growing and is more and more exciting. And like today's guest, Robin O'Brien, that was just incredible. It's an inspiring story, but it's the story of us. It's the story of our food. It couldn't be a more personal story. And so I'm happy that these are the kinds of things that we're bringing to you at Life Changes, and I look forward to us bringing you many, many more life-changing stories for all of us to aspire to, be inspired by, and help not only change ourselves, others, and the world. So I thank our guest again, Robin O'Brien, for being with us today. And you know, I'm excited about our next week's guest, Victoria Moran. Here's what she says about herself. She's been writing for publications since she was a teenager. She wanted to meet the Beatles, so she got a $1 press card from a teen magazine, and it worked. She got into her first Beatles conference, press conference at 14. And then at 15, she got into her second Beatles press conference. And by 17, Paul McCartney bought her a drink. And that's when she knew that even though she was just an ordinary girl from Kansas City with a recurrent weight problem and bad skin, that she could live a charmed life. And so her book, Creating a Charmed Life, is a bestseller, and we're going to be talking to her about that and the love-powered diet. The love-powered diet. Not really sure what that is, but it sounds good to me. Diet and love in the same title. So with that, that is our show for today. And I'm excited, and at the same time, okay, I can't be sad because of how I started the show, because there was a time when we never had this conversation, and now it only lasts an hour, but at least it's an hour a week, and we can always keep the conversation going on our website at lifechanges.ws or through our Facebook pages, mine personally or any of ours, or our fan Facebook page. And so let's do, as Dorothy would say. I want to remind everybody that today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWay's Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles. To learn more about them, visit our sponsor page on our website and click on their links. I am Filippo Voltaggio. I was when I started the show, and I still am. And actually, I feel like I'm more Filippo than I was when I started, because I get energized and excited when we're doing this together. So let's keep doing this. And it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes today. I, along with our segment host and producer Dorothy Lee and our producer Mark Leger and our engineer Seth, thank you for joining us in being part of the show and being part of the world and being part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, Life Changes.